This is 91.3 KUAF, a listener-supported service of the J. William Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences at the University of Arkansas. And this is Ozarks at Large for Wednesday, February 26th, 2020. Ahead this hour, from Little House on the Prairie to Twin Peaks, a collection of entertainment fans are gathering in Fayetteville this weekend. Ozarks at Large's Zuzanna Sitek will explain later. And later today on KUAF, on NPR's Here and Now, writer Sherry Turkle joins the staff at Here and Now to review how the candidates performed in last night's debate, especially the women, Amy Klobuchar and Elizabeth Warren. Here and Now begins at 1, right after this edition of Ozarks at Large. And tomorrow night, Ozark Beer Company continues its Ozark Beer School with a class dedicated to beer myths. Michael McAllister will discuss the truth behind some of the folktales surrounding brew. The tuition for the class is $5. The class starts at 6:30 tomorrow night at the Ozark Brewing location in Rogers. More details can be found at the Facebook page for Ozark Beer Company. This is Ozarks at Large. Nationally, 1 in 7 children face food insecurity. And according to the United States Department of Agriculture, poverty rates are higher in rural America. The rural poverty rate is 16.4% compared to 12.9% in urban areas. And 84% of U.S. counties with the highest percentage of food insecure children are rural. In Arkansas, the rate of child food insecurity in rural areas is 25.3%. That's according to the 2019 Rural Profile of Arkansas that was produced by the University of Arkansas System Division of Agriculture. For a new study commissioned by No Kid Hungry and Feeding America, a team of researchers from 6 universities conducted more than 150 interviews with caregivers and parents living in rural counties in Arkansas, Montana, North Carolina, Oregon, Texas, and West Virginia to analyze what's contributing to these higher rates of food insecurity. Last week, Ozarks at Large's Antoinette Grajeda spoke with Karen Wong, Senior Manager of Research and Evaluation for No Kid Hungry, to learn more about the study.
Hunger in rural areas is an overlooked crisis. 1 in 7 children in America struggle with hunger, and we know that hunger exists in every zip code. But families living in rural America are more likely to experience poverty than those in urban America, and they're more likely to experience food insecurity. And so we felt it was really important to go directly to rural families and hear about their experiences and what they're struggling with. We decided to choose the 6 states and communities that we looked at because we wanted to have a range in diverse communities. So we wanted to have a geographic spread. We wanted to make sure there was diversity in terms of racial and ethnic composition of the communities. We also wanted to include communities that had experienced persistent poverty. Persistent poverty is when counties are experiencing really high rates of poverty for several decades. In addition to that, we also wanted to include diversity in political leanings of the communities, and so we factor that into our selection of the communities included in the study.
And so you talked to more than 150 different people, or you conducted more than 150 interviews with people for the study, and what were the results of that? What did you find?
We found that lack of job opportunities, economic instability, and geographic isolation were really driving child hunger in these communities. Rural areas have definitely recovered more slowly from the Great Recession. And by and large, we kept hearing from families that though they loved the communities that they lived in, that there were strong relationships through family and friends in those communities, it was really a struggle to find jobs that paid enough or even find a job at all. And because of that, they were really struggling to stay on top of the cycle of bills that were overwhelming the household budget. And as a result, their kids were struggling with hunger and their families were struggling with hunger.
And so what are the implications of the study? You mentioned jobs, there a lack of jobs. So the solution seems that there needs to be more jobs, but you can't just create new jobs by snapping your fingers. So what can be done?
There are certainly systems and programs in place that can help families. Certainly, job and economic security is a huge barrier in rural communities. But in addition to that, even getting access to food is a huge barrier. We know that there's, a lot of limited choices that rural communities have in being able to access food. In addition to that, though, we have federal programs that exist to help address that gap. So, for example, school meals, school breakfast program exists, and kids can access school breakfast, but there are so many challenges to getting that because they usually have to get to school early because breakfast is usually served before the bell. So a lot of parents are saying that they want to be able to provide that breakfast for their kids, but they're not able to get them to school to access that. So we think one potential solution is for schools to shift the time that breakfast is served so that they're making it part of the school day and serving it after the bell. And when they do that, kids are more able to access that program and more able to get the nutrition that they need to be able to focus in school and do well in school and be healthy and also be happy.
What are some other steps that people can take?
A number of families are saying that during the summertime, they're really struggling to make ends meet. During the summertime, they're struggling to find ways for their kids to get food and also ensure child care. And a lot of families are saying how they really wanted their children to be able to access summer meals, but there just weren't sites in their communities, or if there were sites, it was so hard to get there because they were so far away. And so we think that improving the summer meals program by making it more flexible so that communities have more ways to serve children in far-flung rural areas would really go a long way in meeting a family's summer food needs.
How would a family in a rural community go about trying to get these changes implemented? Because it sounds like the two suggestions you made were specifically for school programs. How do you convince a school to take some of these extra steps or make these changes? How do you get them to buy into this change?
You know, I think change can happen several ways. Parents can, talk to their teachers and school administrators about the need for their students to be fed during the day and the need for school breakfast. In addition to that, No Kid Hungry is working across the country, working directly with schools and also providing resources so that community-based organizations can also work directly with schools to ask schools to implement breakfast after the bell and make changes to increase access to school meal programs.
What else should we know?
I think, you know, we really just want to emphasize that there are ways that we can ensure that children in rural communities have the opportunities that other children have. And one of the two key ways that we think that can happen is through leveraging the systems that we already have in schools, like school breakfast and summer meals, and just making those programs work better for kids.
Thank you so much for your time today. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
That was Karen Wong, Senior Manager of Research and Evaluation for No Kid Hungry, speaking with Ozarks at Large's Antoinette Grajeda. A link to the full report is available on our website, ozarksatlarge.com. The 11th Annual Empty Bowls event is tomorrow evening at Van Buren High School. Admission allows guests to select a ceramic bowl made by Van Buren High School students and other guest artists and have a symbolic meal of soup and bread. Proceeds are directed toward the Meals for Kids backpack program throughout the Arkansas River Valley through Community Services Clearinghouse. The event from 5:30 to 7:30 tomorrow night, and it's sponsored by the Van Buren High School Art Department. More information can be found at the Facebook page for Empty Bowls 2020. A new project from the University of Arkansas is building off of a federal endowment from the 1980s. With new leadership and a steering committee in place, the Arkansas Humanities Center is poised to establish more research and collaborative programs for arts and sciences at the university. Ozarks at Large's Daniel Carruth brings us more.
This year, the University of Arkansas established the Arkansas Humanities Center, a new research center to help support faculty and students in the Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences and to develop the college's community outreach programming. Professor of History and Director Trish Starks says the center is building on a grant from the National Endowment of the Humanities that it received nearly four decades ago.
There was a grant in the 1980s that began a lot of new curricular developments, including the Honors Humanities Project, which is a three-sequence course that a lot of our honors students go through that combines humanities across disciplinary perspective and really helps students to develop critical thinking skills, excellent communication and writing skills, and moving into research and study.
That endowment also helped to develop interdisciplinary studies and curriculum. Starks says as those programs have grown and shifted, the grant money is now being used to fuel more research and outreach.
Professor Catherine Sloan, who was the previous director, moved it from this kind of humanities programs into the position of being the Humanities Center. She went through the process of approval, creating the mission statement for the center, and discussing how it would be part of a research agenda. She's since moved on to become the Vice Provost of Faculty Development at the University of Arkansas, and I just moved into the post this January to be the director of the center. So it's really a very new project. It's a very exciting project in terms of giving the humanities a visibility, a voice, and strength on the campus that is already there. We already have amazing scholars who are incredibly productive, but my job is to help facilitate their research and also get that research out into the world.
She says a main goal of the center is to break down interdisciplinary barriers and to enhance the work of both faculty and students.
We've created a steering committee that is bringing together the foundational disciplines, the core departments of the humanities in Fulbright College. That's communication, English, history, journalism, philosophy, world languages, literatures, and cultures. We've got people from all of those who are going to help us create agendas to enrich faculty engagement, help their research, and help them deliver on that research through research fellowships, through subventions. We're going to discuss how can we best facilitate the work of faculty at the University of Arkansas in the humanities.
She says this renewed focus also helps bring the university's humanities departments more attention and opportunity nationally. The center's associate director, Lisette Switzke-Davis, recently received $160,000 in grant money for a national project this summer.
She got an NEH grant for a summer teaching institute, along with Sean Connors, a professor in curriculum and instruction. And what that's going to do is going to bring K through 12 educators from across the United States to Fayetteville for a two-week teaching institute where they will work with scholars here at the U of A in developing curriculum that they'll take back into their classrooms. And so it's allowing the University of Arkansas to have a national influence.
And by establishing the Arkansas Humanities Center, Stark says the university is helping to fulfill its land grant duty to serve the public.
And I can tell you that I think humanities are important to our continued functioning as a society, but also are very important skill sets for our students as they go out into jobs in all sorts of areas. The humanities is the study of language and literature, of culture, of art creation, of history, of law. And that study, those classes that they take, they're going to learn essential skills for taking them out into the world. They're going to learn how to reason, how to think critically and analyze material. They're going to learn how to write and communicate effectively. And those skills are going to take them all sorts of places, because we know from Fortune 500 CEOs that they have humanities degrees, many of them. But I'm also very interested in making sure that people of this region have access to the scholarship and understanding of how rich the humanities are and how much they can enrich our lives and our society.
For Ozarks at Large, I'm Daniel Carruth.
The Washington County League of Women Voters will observe the 100th anniversary of both the National League and the Washington County League with a big celebration Sunday at George's Majestic Lounge on Dixon Street in Fayetteville. Five bands, all fronted by women, will take the stage throughout the afternoon and early evening. Ozarks at Large's Antoinette Grajeda will be an MC, along with Sunshine Broder, host of the radio program Sunshine After Dark. And in just a minute, Timothy Dennis will give us the full lineup for Sunday's event, as well as a partial rundown of music we can expect throughout the weekend and into early next week in our region. That's just ahead on Ozarks at Large.
KUAF is supported by Pack Rat Outdoor Center, Northwest Arkansas's outdoor outfitter since 1973. Pack Rat offers work to wilderness clothing, footwear, and more. Information including outdoor clinics and events available on Facebook or packratoc.com. Walton Arts Center's 10x10 art series presents Apollo's Fire, Baroque Orchestra, Vivaldi's Four Seasons, Rediscovered, Saturday, February 29th at 8 p.m. This ensemble brings Vivaldi's beloved concertos to life as revolutionary acts of musical storytelling. WaltonArtsCenter.org or 443-5600.
This is Ozarks at Large. A comic convention is coming to Fayetteville this weekend, and it's bringing in some big names in pop culture and comics. Ozarks at Large's Zuzanna Sitek spoke with Donna Joseph, who is one of the three people who organized the event, about what attendees can expect.
If someone has never heard of a comic show or has never been to one of these events, what is it? What can people expect when they come out?
People who enjoy and celebrate their nerdness, their geek, their that one thing that makes them come together with other people of like minds, like Harry Potter, Star Wars, Star Trek, anything and everything, even anime. They read comic books and stuff, so it's a place for everyone to come together and kind of just collaborate and just enjoy being around people that have the same kind of fandoms that they do.
So what qualifies a movie or a TV show or a comic book to be part of the fandom that's included at a comic show like this one?
You know, that's a great question because, you know, if you come to me and you ask me, hey, what's your fandom? Mine's Star Wars. So anything and everything that's Star Wars will always be in. But I also love anime. I grew up on anime. Star Blazers, Ultron. I mean, there's so many other things. So it's not just one thing. There's not like a rule. There's not a rule book that says only Spider-Man can be in it and Batman cannot. That's why you have these great conversations. Who is more important, DC or Marvel? That's why you have these, you have programs and panels at these conventions, and you have artists and you have actors that debate these questions that, you know, it's one of those things where even when I take my son to school, he'll ask me, who do you think would win, Iron Man or Wonder Woman? Hands down, Wonder Woman. Duh. There's no question. But there's always those questions of, like you said, what makes something a category of a fandom?
We know one of the fandoms at this comic show will be Twin Peaks, and you're bringing some of the cast. Can you tell us a little bit about that and who else is coming?
That's become a cult classic, too. So you have movies that start out just being a movie, right? And you never know that it's going to become a cult classic until, what, 20, 30 years later? And so we were just in the right place at the right time and made a decision that because it was this year that they were going to be celebrating their anniversary, that we thought maybe we could grab a couple of their fans. And it's a great movie. And we've met some of the actors before at other conventions, and they're all amazing people. And so then we were like, well, what can we pair that with? And so Sleepaway Camp, which is another horror classic. And then we happened to find out that Charlotte Stewart, who is in Twin Peaks, was also in Little House on the Prairie. And so we asked Allison Engram to come up to be part of a Little House on the Prairie. And then we got C. Thomas Howell from Outsiders and Red Dawn. And then John Wesley Shipp from The Flash is coming. And then we're bringing in Mr. Jim Shooter. He is Mr. Marvel. I mean, any book written came by his editor, Death. So it was Stan Lee and then Jim Shooter. So to have him to be at our show is amazing.
I think a lot of people are excited about Jim Shooter coming. I know Kyle is. You're also going to have some voice actors. Can you tell us a little bit about that? Because the voice actors do play an important role in a lot of these fandoms that you mentioned.
Brittany Kalbaski's coming. Aaron Roberts is coming. Alejandra Staub is coming. Don Bennett, Amber Connors, and Melissa Sternenberg. Voice actors are amazing people because they take us on this journey where it's a dimensional character, but their voice gives it life. So you might not know what they look like, but you know what their voice sounds like. And so they've become more and more prominent lately. And it's amazing what they can do. academia. Where's that voice coming from?
We talked a lot about the people who will be there. So how will visitors to the show be able to interact with everyone? What kind of events are going to be held during the course of the 2 days that this is happening?
Well, we have a Q&A panel where the individuals will go and take like a 45-minute interviews, like Q&A, questions and answers from their fans. They'll be able to see them at their tables. They'll be able to meet them, be able to do professional photo ops, get autographs. And we also have sponsors like Dave & Buster's is going to be there. They're going to be giving away free items. We have Experience Fayetteville that's going to be set up. We have Damn Good Pies is going to be set up selling pizza. We have Arcadia, who is bringing the first original Marvel arcade game. And Dave & Buster's is bringing the latest 20,000 arcade game of the same type. It's kind of a cool little introduction into video games. It's a pretty fun atmosphere if you've never been before.
That was Fayetteville Comic Show organizer Donna Joseph speaking with Ozarks at Large's Zuzanna Sitek. Zuzanna's correct. I'm very excited about Jim Shooter coming to town. The main events will take place at the Fayetteville Town Center, while panel discussions and Q&A sessions will be held at the Graduate Hotel. For tickets and more information about the convention, you can go to FayettevilleComicShow.com.
This is Reflections in Black, and I'm your host, Raven Cook. Reflections in Black is a segment dedicated to exploring the legacy of Black Americans in the United States and around the globe. Reflections in Black also provides resources for understanding and hope for all people. During the 19th century, several voices stood in opposition to the injustice of slavery. Women and men, black and white, looking to make radical change in whatever way they could, were essential to dismantling a 250-year system of slavery in the United States. One of the many voices of that day was William Wells Brown. William was born to a white father and enslaved mother in what historians believe was 1814. As a child, he spent much of his early life in St. Louis, Missouri, working in a variety of trades. On New Year's Day, 1834, William slipped away from his owner's steamboat while it docked in Cincinnati, Ohio. As Brown ventured into a world free from bondage, he was taken in by the Wells Brownses, a white Quaker family, and William would soon go on to adopt their last name, becoming William Wells Brown. William Wells Brown would move to Cleveland, Ohio, meet and marry an African-American woman, and go on to have two daughters. Brown would move his family to Buffalo, New York, and become a conductor, or one who assisted enslaved persons on the Underground Railroad. The Underground Railroad was a secret network designed to help enslaved persons escape the system of slavery before the Civil War. Though termed the Underground Railroad, the system was equipped with a myriad of covert measures to help enslaved persons reach the North, which was often as far as Canada, for safety. In 1843, Wells Brown was making frequent appearances on the lecture circuit for the Western New York Anti-Slavery Society. Brown's work didn't extend to only abolition, but also women's rights and temperance. Collectively, abolition, women's rights, and temperance movements were essential to understanding the political and social mobilization of leaders in the 19th and 20th centuries. Brown's involvement with these lectures provided a roadmap for his work in literature. After the success of Frederick Douglass's autobiography, Brown would go on to publish his own titled Narratives of William W. Brown, a Fugitive Slave, written by himself. The autobiography became incredibly popular and led Brown to further opportunities in Europe, where he delivered more than 1,000 speeches. He also wrote two other texts, titled 3 Years in Europe and his most notable work, Clotel. Clotel is one of the earliest novels written by an African American and the first to be published by a British publishing house. The year 1858 brought Wells Brown more success as his play, The Escape, became the first ever published by an African American. As the Civil War began and slavery ended, William Wells Brown's lecture career slowed, and he settled in Boston, where he would stay until his death in 1884. William Wells Brown's life is an example of how we can use adversity to continue to make a difference in our world. His impact is lasting, and his spirit lives on in young writers and speakers around the world. Today, we honor the incredible life of William Wells Brown.
Reflections in Black is a production of KUAF Public Radio in Fayetteville, Arkansas. You can hear weekly segments on Ozarks at Large, and you can learn more about this series online at KUAF.com. Just search for Reflections in Black.
This is Ozarks at Large. We are in the Harold and Blanchcock News Studio. Timothy Dennis is with me. Timothy, it's time to take a look at music headed our way.
Let's start with tomorrow night, Thursday night. George's Majestic Lounge in Fayetteville is going to have Shane Smith and the Saints on stage. They are kind of a country rock band from Texas.
All right.
In the cracks of this roof, tea's boiling from the spout of the pot, but all I see is you.
Tickets for that show are $10 today. They go up to $12 tomorrow. Gets underway at about 9 o'clock tomorrow night. Again, that's at George's in Fayetteville. Also happening in downtown Fayetteville, there's going to be a jazz jam at U.S. Pizza Company.
Yeah, this is something they do monthly,
Or twice a month, okay. I think. I don't know. I'm not exactly sure.
We do know it's happening tomorrow night.
It is happening tomorrow night. It's hosted by the Northwest Arkansas Jazz Society. It gets underway at about 7 o'clock tomorrow night. Again, that's at U.S. Pizza Company on Dixon Street in Fayetteville.
Some of the jazz all-stars in the area. I heard from someone that there might be some special guests tomorrow night.
Yeah, so. And toward the end of it, they allow other people in the community who want to, who bring their axes, to come up and jam. Moving on to Friday night, the Flip-Off Pirates will be on stage at Smoke and Barrel Tavern.
Well, I woke up at 3 in the morning, the moon shining brighter than day. I woke up at 3 in the morning, the moon shining brighter than day. Well, I thought I heard the holy, but it was only a lonely ghost.
They're actually going to be hosting a fundraiser for their next album with this show at Smoke and Barrel Tavern.
Okay.
That gets underway at about 10 o'clock Friday night. Again, that is at the Smoke and Barrel in downtown Fayetteville. There's another show happening in downtown Fayetteville at Backspace that's going to be kind of an alt-rock show.
Mm-hmm.
It's featuring the Teddies, Barista Boys, Sharp Woolston, and John Charles.
That's a good lineup.
It's a great lineup.
And a whole lot more just spreading around. You can put me in a hat, my sight, and a gun, a little whiskey in a sack, and a bottle of rum. I got a blackjack, honey, and a go-to.
They'll be asking for donations at the door. Should get underway at about 9 o'clock Friday night. Again, that's at Backspace in Fayetteville. Moving up to Springdale, a guy who goes by Meadows on stage is going to be at Angle and Volkers in Springdale. It's a show that's sponsored by the House of Songs. He is a singer-songwriter who is in town from Sweden, and we'll actually hear a little bit from him on Friday's Ozarks.
And then you can catch him live in Springdale.
Exactly, at Engel & Volkers. It used to be called Midtown Associates. They'll be asking for donations at the door for that show. Gets underway at about 7 o'clock. Again, that's Friday night in Springdale. Also in Springdale Friday night, Honey Shuffle will be on stage at Black Apple Crossing.
Okay.
That gets underway at about 8 o'clock. Again, that's Friday night at Black Apple Crossing in Springdale. Moving over to Rogers, Moonbrook Brewing Company is going to welcome the Velvet Crowns.
Looking around and I don't like what I see or think I'm going home. Oh, it's not that I'm weak, no, far from it.
That show gets underway at about 8 o'clock Friday night again. That's the Velvet Crowns at Moonbrock in Rogers. Over in Eureka Springs, a woman by the name of Abby Pierce is going to be on stage at the Gravel Bar. That gets underway at 7 o'clock Friday night. Again, that's at the Gravel Bar over in Eureka Springs. Okay, moving on to Saturday night, Bill Dollar and Loose Change will be on stage at Murano's.
She has a wind as a witness. She has feelings of fly by nine. It's not love if it holds too tight.
That set gets underway at about 8 o'clock Saturday night. Again, that's at Murano's in Fayetteville. Also in Fayetteville, it's that time of the month for Last Saturday Fayetteville.
It's not just last Saturday, it's February 29th.
That's true.
You only get this once every 4 years, folks.
This month's Last Saturday is going to feature performances by Molly Abramson, Doug Shields, Jesse Dean, and others.
Oh, that's a great show.
It's time to think, to take a breath or two. Changes every time you blink, towards what food. And it's a shame, we just waste this life away.
There's no cover. Gets underway at about 7:30 Saturday night. Again, that's at the American Legion Post 27 in Fayetteville. Okay, moving on to Bentonville. There's going to be a band by the name of Compulsive Child playing at the Nines.
I like that.
Compulsive spelled with a K.
Okay.
They are kind of an alt-rock band based in Claremore, Oklahoma.
This ain't right. I can't.
That gets underway at 8 o'clock Saturday night at the Nines in Bentonville.
In Bentonville.
Still in Bentonville Saturday night, the Buddy Shoot Trio will be at Ramo Dolivo.
We love Buddy Shoot. He's been on our show
a few times. That gets underway at about 7:30 Saturday night at Ramo Dolivo in Bentonville. Over in Eureka Springs, Chelsea's is going to have the Don Kate Band on stage.
The Don Kate Band will also be at the Georgia's
right.
League of Women Voters.
More on that in okay. just right. a minute. But that show with the Don Kate Band Saturday night at Chelsea's gets underway at about 9:30. Down in Fort Smith, there's going to be a metal show at Majestic featuring Vor, Vesperian Sorrow, Pantheon, and Northwind Wolves. Mm-hmm. Tickets for that show are $5 in advance, go up to $10 day of. It gets underway at about 8 o'clock Saturday night. Again, that's at the Majestic in Fort Smith. Okay, moving on to Sunday, something we talked about earlier in the week on the show. The Barbalutes are going to have a release show for their CD.
Right, that'll be just across the street from our studio.
Right, it's Cochran and Shore plus Ezra and Keith from Trout Fishing in America and some other special guests. It's a free show, gets underway at 2 o'clock Sunday afternoon. Again, that's at Fayetteville Public Library. Now, as you mentioned just a couple minutes ago, the League of Women Voters are having a birthday celebration at Georgia's Majestic Lounge.
100th anniversary of the National League, 100th anniversary of the Washington County League, and it's also the 100th year anniversary of women's suffrage.
And they're going to feature quite a few female-fronted bands
right.
that are locally based, including Jenna and the Soul Shakers, Jamie Lou and the Hullabaloo, Don Kate Band,
right.
Leah and the Mojo Doctors, and Rochelle Bradshaw and Hypnotion.
Yeah.
It should be one heck of a show.
Yeah.
And it starts at about 2 o'clock. They're asking for, what, $5 at the door?
Yeah.
Again, that is Sunday afternoon at George's in Fayetteville. Then one more show at George's I want to let you know about. Monday night, Dweezil Zappa is going to be back in Fayetteville.
And I didn't go to the last show when he was here.
I didn't either.
But I talked to people who did, and they said he put on a heck of a show.
Well, this show, he's supposed to be playing Hot Rats Live and some other goodies from 1969 his father put out.
Oh, that'll be fun.
Tickets for that show are $25 in advance. They go up to $30 on Monday. Should get underway at about 9 o'clock Monday night. Again, that's at George's Majestic Lounge in Fayetteville.
Thank you, Timothy.
Thank you.
$20 bill, I can set you straight. Meet me on the corner, boy, I don't need you.
A landmark with its share of legend is in need of repair after an accident. The Spoofer Stone on the lawn of Old Main was damaged in a construction accident this week. The University of Arkansas shared the news, along with a picture of the rock split into pieces, yesterday on Twitter. The Spoofer Stone has been part of the university lore for decades and the site for many proposals, with superstition shared about what it means for a young couple to be at the rock. Some legends more salacious than others. According to the tweet from the university, plans are being discussed about how to repair the rock. The Arkansas Razorback softball team now ranked number 22 in the country. Latest rankings came out yesterday. Arkansas is 12-2. Next plays at home in the Woo Pig Classic at Bogle Park beginning tomorrow.
Ozarks at Large is underwritten, in part, by the Walton Family Charitable Support Foundation. Support comes from Malco Theaters, with locations in Rogers, Springdale, Fort Smith, Van Buren, and the Fayetteville IMAX Theater. Malco gift cards available at all locations and online at malco.com.
This is Ozarks at Large. The exhibit, Wedding Dresses Around the World, is on display in the Ann Kittrell Art Gallery in the Student Union on the University of Arkansas campus. Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich takes us there.
Stephanie Wen, Visual and Performing Arts Coordinator for University Programs and a sophomore at the University of Arkansas majoring in Marketing with a double minor in Sustainability and Economics, says the concept for curating the wedding dress exhibit traces to her cultural identity.
I am actually Vietnamese. My parents are Vietnamese, and so I've always grown up around like the Vietnamese wedding dress and the culture and traditions. And now, like being more grown, it's like I realize that people aren't used to this, like different cultures and that different traditions of other people. And so I just wanted to expose like everybody's eyes to these different types of wedding dresses.
There are seven different countries represented in this exhibit.
We have Korea, the United States, Vietnam, Laos, Afghanistan, India, and Thailand. And only two of the countries are borrowed from people that we knew, USA and Vietnam. And the other ones I found like mostly overseas from designers in from that particular country. So I got in contact with them, told them about the exhibit, and we were able to get dresses.
Styles of wedding dresses reflect certain cultural roots, she says, starting with a pale yellow high-waisted traditional Korean gown.
They wear a traditional dress called the hanbok, and colors that a Korean bride would usually wear are pinks and purples and pastels. So it's like, they also have this tassel that they tie on their skirt called the norigai. They also have headpieces, and I also have specific shoes for them. They wear like specific socks and specific shoes.
Traditionally, patterns embroidered on Korean wedding dresses represent the wishes of the bride. For example, peonies, indicating a desire for honor and wealth. Two Vietnamese wedding dresses are also in the exhibit, both worn by a single bride.
Yes, so I have two represented here. We have a white one and a red one because that's how it goes in tradition. Like first the bride is in the white dress, and then once she meets the groom and then they go to the ceremony, she changes into the red wedding dress.
White, possibly suggesting purity and new beginnings. And the red gown?
Red is a symbol of luck and wealth and prosperity, for sure.
The tight-fitting silk tunics are worn over trousers, and instead of a bridal veil, traditional Vietnamese brides wear hats. Afghanistan bridal dresses are elaborately embroidered and traditionally green in color, associated with prosperity and paradise, with the bride changing over to a white dress after this ceremony. The dress on display here is multicolored.
Pinks and greens and oranges. We have some very interesting pendants. We have vintage pendants on the wall from the nomadic tribe. You can see on the mannequin that they have like coins on the necklaces. Lots of embroidery and bright colors for sure.
The Thailand wedding dress display includes a selection of silks, which can be draped diagonally across the chest, cascading down the back.
Because they have such unique fabrics and textures, and this is definitely very traditional in how they definitely have different colors and different styles, whereas in the United States, it is like lace, primarily lace or silk. But these are really interesting designs. And then for the dress, they have the gold jewelry. They have like an elegant one-shoulder draping that like goes down all the way to the floor, which is quite similar, I would say, to the last one that's right behind you because of how the skirt is positioned. But the last one also has the body jewelry. It has the sash, and golds and whites are definitely the most prominent colors for Laos.
Stephanie Wen also chose two American bridal gowns to show in the exhibit.
I got them borrowed from friends, but this one that's hanging on the wall is actually somebody who works at the university. And so she was so kind to let me borrow a dress, and even her pictures are right there on the wall too, because she recently got married.
Wedding dresses from around the world will be on display in the Ann Kittrell Art Gallery through Wednesday, March 4th. Gallery hours are 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. Monday through Friday. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
This is Ozarks at Large. Arkansas Senator John Bozeman paid tribute to the late Charles Portis on the U.S. Senate floor this week. Portis, who wrote True Grit, Norwood, Dog of the South, and other works, died last week. Senator Bozeman says Charles Portis shined as both a journalist and as a novelist.
Though he voluntarily ended his journalism career in 1964, he used the skills and the tools he'd acquired as a reporter when he returned home to Arkansas and began writing fiction. His most celebrated work is the Western classic, True Grit. This book chronicles the efforts of a Yale County teenager, Matty Ross, along with the U.S. Marshal Rooster Cogburn, to avenge the death of Matty's father at the hands of a drifter. The novel incorporates distinct references familiar to many Arkansans and depicts life on the frontier in what was then the Wild, Wild West.
That was Senator John Bozeman speaking on the U.S. Senate floor earlier this week. Charles Portis earned a journalism degree at the University of Arkansas, and he worked as a reporter in both Little Rock and New York. This weekend on Milk Street Radio on KUAF, the trials and tribulations of recreating famous snack foods, plus a conversation with the creator of the world's hottest pepper, the Carolina Reaper, and a renowned home brewer makes beer with only ingredients found in a grocery store. Milk Street Radio with Christopher Kimball, Saturday at noon on 91.3 KUAF. And you can find a schedule of all of the great programs we have on the weekend at KUAF.com. Attendees to this weekend's Arkansas Living History Conference at Mount Sequoia will learn, among other things, the best ways to make a meat pie or biscuits the old-fashioned way. Cake and cornbread making also on the agenda. The entire conference is sponsored by the Shiloh Museum of Ozark History. You can find out more at ArkansasLivingHistory.com. And then there are Moms Night Out events. You've heard about those. Then there are Moms Night Out events with axes. A group called Fit for Mom will host an axe throwing Moms Night Out Friday night at Urban Forest Axe House in Bentonville. You can learn more by searching Facebook for Fit for Mom Northwest Arkansas.
It's the Community Spotlight on KUAF. I'm Pete Hartman. Today in the Nancy Blair Operations Studio, we're joined with Megan Looney. She teaches at Northwest Arkansas Community College and also is involved in the Spring Arts and Culture Festival. Megan, nice to meet you as well.
Nice to meet you too. So excited to be here. The Spring Arts and Culture Festival has been around in various iterations for over 10 years. It started very small, just inviting one author to campus where that author gives a reading and maybe does a workshop with students. And And we really saw a need for our students and also for the community to better engage with the arts and culture. I mean, there's been such a blossoming of the arts. Last year and this year, we expanded it from just a two-day event to now 4 days, Monday through Thursday. And we are going to have 30 different events, ranging from art installations by Craig Colarusso to performances by Latinx Theater Project, musical performances. We have panels. We have an artist, actually, from whose work is going to be in the momentary, coming and actually doing a workshop with our students.
Wow.
And their what is produced in that workshop might actually become part of her installation at the momentary.
Oh my gosh.
So,
wow.
Really, we're wanting to start conversations about important social issues, promote the arts, and just invite the Northwest Arkansas Community College, as well as Northwest Arkansas at large, into a larger conversation. This is for everyone. All of the events are free and open to the public. And these events range from starting at 9 a.m. in the morning through 9 p.m. at night. One thing, for example, is that we're bringing in the New York Times bestselling author, Garrett Conley, who wrote the memoir Boy Erased. He's going to be giving a talk on March 4th at noon, okay. And that's going to be followed by a brief Q&A with him, as well as a book signing.
Yeah. Thank you all so much for letting me know about this.
Thank you.
As always, it's the Community Spotlight on KUAF. Local matters. In the next few days, we'll be hearing from some artists taking part in next week's Northwest Arkansas Community College's Spring Arts and Culture Festival. It runs May 2nd through the 5th. You can find more at nwacc.edu/SACF.
And we'll have more about that festival on tomorrow's Ozarks at Large as well. This is 91.3 KUAF, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Bentonville, and Clarksville. 91.3 KUAF is a listener-supported service of the School of Journalism and Strategic Media at the University of Arkansas. Contributors to this Wednesday edition of Ozarks at Large included Antoinette Grajeda, Jacqueline Froelich, Timothy Dennis, Zuzanna Sitek, and Daniel Carruth. Timothy also mastered our show in the Harold and Blanchcock News Studio. Reflections in Black is written and hosted by Raven Cook, founder and president of Foundations, Black History Education Programming, and Reflections in Black is produced by Alex Duffy. The Community Spotlight is produced by Pete Hartman in the Nancy Blair Operations Studio at KUAF. Support for use of archival material from the past 30 years of Ozarks at Large provided by the Women's Giving Circle at the University of Arkansas. And Antoinette Grajeda provides musical endings to many of our editions of Ozarks at Large by selecting songs from our archives, performances that were recorded just for us. So today we'll end with Rochelle Bradshaw and Hypnotion and the song Overstanding. That band will once again, let you know, headline the League of Women Voters 100th anniversary celebration that's taking place at George's Majestic Lounge Sunday afternoon. That's on Dixon Street. That begins at 2. There will be bands at 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6. Thanks so much for being with us. We will be back with another new program tomorrow at noon and 7. And you can always find shows and individual stories and interviews at ozarksatlarge.com. Also, we're available as a free podcast, so you can listen to us on your schedule. Available through all kinds of services, Google, Stitcher, Apple Podcasts. You name a place where you can get a podcast, you can probably get Ozarks at Large there. And you can also tell your smart speaker, play the Ozarks at Large podcast. I'm Kyle Kelms. Thanks so much for being with us. Have a great rest of your Wednesday.
Be living if we go on without forgiving. Oh, what kind of message are we teaching our youth if we go on neglecting the truth? Gotta learn some overstanding, try and be a little less demanding. Check our own.
start to criticize another. But we should know by now every man on this land is a brother. We are fist up, draw blood, show some love to our sisters. We should know by now every man on this land is a brother. We are fist up, draw blood, show some love. No man is an island, nobody can stand alone. And in times of destruction, we need self-control. And let's let go of all our negativities, burn out corruption and all impurities. Can't turn our backs no more, no more. Got to stand together, division we can cure. And learn some overstanding. Try and be a little less demanding. We need to check our own lives before we start to criticize another. We should know by now every man on this land is a brother. We are fist up, draw blood, show some love to our sisters. We should know by now every man on this land is a brother. We are fist up, draw blood, show some love. Intervention. This ain't the plan Jah had from creation. So let's get together and build a better nation. We should know by now every man on this land is a brother. We are fist up, draw blood, show more love to our sisters. We should know by now every man on this land is a brother. We are fist up, draw blood, show some love. So we should know by now, we should know by now. Oh, oh, oh. We should know by now, we should know by now. We should know by now, we should know. Every man on this land is a brother.